So this week, what are we starting with?
A wee review.
That's right. Very good. No one else to cut you off this week.
No one else. No, Luke's not here to cut me off.
So this one says, Intelligent Chaos. I would describe this show as beautifully chaotic. Very interesting topics and thought-provoking conversations between the hosts. Sometimes, though, it's a bit difficult to grasp what they're actually trying to convey, jumping from one idea to the next. I wouldn't have it any other way, and it gives me lots of laughs.
Very good. Nice. That's such a nice review.
Very, very nice. We do jump from thing to thing. And speaking of jumping from thing to thing, we should probably start the show.
Start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jem, Noah Fince, and special guest, Shaba. Hello! How are you doing,
Shaba? Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me on. This is cool. Your setup is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Beautiful lighting.
Yes, I'm loving the purple. Yeah. You're giving me bi vibes.
Oh, bi guys.
Bisexual.
This week, we'll be talking about our relationships.
I don't think we should do that.
Well, we're not talking about our relationships. We're talking about parasocial relationships. Have you heard about those before?
Yeah, I have heard about these.
Has anyone here heard about them before? Anyone at all have any experience with parasocial relationships?
I'm sure we've all had some at some point.
I mean, I think I've heard about it once or twice.
Is it a hot topic online at the moment?
It is a hot topic online at the moment. Yeah, that is something that people are talking about a lot, but maybe they don't understand exactly what it is. So that's what we are here for today. So let's jump right into it. What is a parasocial interaction and a parasocial relationship? Anyone know?
It's like a one-way friendship formed through some kind of medium. Now it's like social media a lot, isn't it? So it's like one person gets an attachment to someone, but the other person doesn't know that they exist. In a way.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. Kind of like a high school crush. Yeah, that's a pretty good description of it. Do you know what I'm going to do first? What I'll do first is I will read you the original description of it from when it was first described. So this is verbatim. One of the striking characteristics of the new mass media, radio, television, and the movies is that they give the illusion of face-to-face relationship with the performer. The conditions of response to the performer are analogous to those in a primary group. The most remote and illustrious men are met as if they were in the circle of one's peers. The same is true of a character in a story who comes to life in these media in an especially vivid and arresting way. Ooh. We propose to call this seeming face-to-face relationship between spectator and performer a parasocial relationship.
Ooh. Scary.
Yeah, so basically, a parasocial relationship, it's the... Well, let's first talk about what a parasocial interaction is.
Okay.
Because you can't have a parasocial relationship without a parasocial interaction.
We're doing a parasocial interaction right now.
Yeah, we are.
Hello, oh God, everybody we are as well. At home.
Hello. I was going to say we're your
friends.
I
thought you meant
but...
to each other.
No. Oh, my God.
No, with you.
To the viewers.
If we just internet. Don't respond to Shaba at all. Yeah. Okay, if we pretend that Shaba's not there, it will suddenly become...
Who's the fourth person on the show again?
So a parasocial interaction is... basically the sort of interaction that you were talking about wherein it's kind of mediated through sort of the media by one person, by a sort of personality. So it was originally used to describe TV personalities, but it's kind of broadened out now to describe, you know, those on social media as well.
Do you think people have parasocial relationships with Anton Deck?
Yes, of course they
do. That's probably,
crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There was actually a paper written specifically about them and like TV presenters.
Oh my God.
Paul O'Grady comes up more than you'd expect. Apparently, Paul O'Grady is a very good example of...
Everybody's gay uncle.
Sure.
But no, this is actually something really... So Paul O'Grady and all these sort of chat shows. So if you might notice this with chat shows in the UK. A lot of them look like they're done in their living room. Alan Carr, chatty man.
Yeah.
You know, he's sitting having a drink with them. Jonathan Ross's setup looks kind of like a living room. Paul O'Grady's setup looked exactly like someone's living
That's
room.
So true.
Even the Graham Norton show. Yeah. They're all sitting on a sofa, you know, all like, you know, rubbing elbows. It's like, oh yeah, I'm sitting with Graham Norton and my friends, Natalie Portman, Chris Hemsworth, and Simon Pegg. But
in the UK though.
Sorry?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
that's in the UK. Yeah. But like in the US, it's so different. It's all like corporate and flashy and they've got the like city skylines.
In the US, it's more like a sort of stand-up thing, isn't it?
I make all my videos on my bed.
You're inviting people in. That's the problem.
What are you trying to imply?
I think the worst offender is Bear in the Big Blue House. He literally brings them in. He literally brings them into his house.
He speaks directly to you, though. He goes, come on
into my house.
He's encouraging.
I don't know how he speaks anymore.
Come on into my house. Where's Shadow?
Shall we finish describing what a parasocial relationship and interaction?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. To be honest.
So
yeah.
Parasocial relationships, basically, a regular viewer of TV. This is kind of going back to the original description. A regular viewer would come to feel like they know. Sort of the television personalities, almost as the same way that they know Friends. And not Friends the show, bear in mind, Friends, you know, those things that
in
you
real
hang
life,
out with.
Interpersonal friends. Those things.
You know those things you hang out with, the ones that you enjoy?
I've learned something today.
Yeah. You'll find some one day. They sort of psychologically resemble face-to-face interaction, but of course they are controlled by one side and they are very one-sided. And when I say one-sided, what I mean is they are controlled almost entirely by the performer. Now bear in mind, the performer doesn't necessarily just mean sort of the Paul O'Grady type. It could be in terms of a movie, the person that is sort of, you know, writing the movie or directing it, all of that stuff. Basically, the people on sort of the creating side are in control of the relationship.
Yes.
Whereas the people on the sort of receiving end, all they can really do is experience the relationship or walk away. Yeah.
It's presented to them.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what if, I'm sure a lot of like men in their probably 50s think they have a personal relationship with porn, like cam girls, they can directly interact with them. So is that still a parasocial relationship? If you're like, hey, if I send you $10, you will twerk. Is that?
You're throwing me the difficult questions, like less than 10 minutes. So
well,
okay.
Did you come across this in your research?
A little bit. So this is
some cam girls.
Well, I look,
links
honestly,
in the description.
A lot of the Sci Guys Patreon money did have to go to Cam Girls this month, purely for research purposes. Yeah. I'm sorry. There was nothing else
we
could
do. We had to
do
an experiment where Corey formed a parasocial relationship
with a
Cam Girl.
I just simply could not find the right Cam Girl. But once I did, I had to give her as much money as possible.
After we tried 22 of them, we finally found the right one.
Rigorously tested for about 8 hours each.
You've got to have a very high sample size in order for your result. Spirit.
He does this for
statistical
you guys.
Statistical significance.
No, look, I'm going to be honest. I could try and answer this. I think the fact is that with a parasocial relationship, the key point is that it is very much mediated and controlled by one side. So you could say, in a sense, that cam girls have quite a large degree of control over it, in the same way that a YouTuber, if you know what a YouTuber is, Noah, can read comments from the people that watch them, but they still control that sort of interaction there.
I'm sure I can delete them. I will.
I'm sure Shabba has a much better sort of view of that than I might.
So you're right, Noah, but like the concept, so the original concept that Corey's been talking about is from 56 specifically, 1956, which is like way before the internet existed. When did the internet come into effect?
Did they have email then?
Guys, it's 1950 fucking six. It's before the internet existed.
The
moon landing was 1969.
Okay. Oh, sorry for not knowing when the moon landing specifically was to the day. Fuck, I was born in 1999.
Moon landing is the funny number.
The funny number, okay. Yeah. Now I will remember. 69. Thank you for not being patronizing.
I will always remember that. Thank you so much, Jeff. Oh my God.
The funny number.
The funny number.
The 20th of April, 1969. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
Now imagine if it was, though.
That's
it was
an A-slapper. It's an A-slapper.
Ha weird jokes.
But no, 56. So social media was definitely not a thing there. And two-way interaction wasn't a thing. So in most recent parasocial studies, it's definitely been looked at as a pseudo-parasocial relationship, with the idea being that an interpersonal relationship, I know you, right? And you know me, and we know each other on equal levels. Mm. But Okay, Corey's like, no.
Oh no, I'm enjoying listening to you. This is my enjoying listening to you face.
Oh, stricken beard. But if you take the, like, for example, any of you, Corey, you have a creator presence, you're on YouTube, you have thousands of subscribers, there is no way that you could maintain an equal relationship with all of these people. So even though you might see them at meet and greet sometimes, even in person, even though you might tweet or like their tweet, it's not equal. It's still a parasocial interaction.
Okay.
Ah.
That makes sense.
You know what? Luke is not here today, but I'm very glad that Shaba has very, very, aptly taken up the role of Luke to spoil what I was just about to talk about.
Oh, God. No, it's a good thing.
No, it's a good thing. No, it's how the podcast works. So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about parasocial relationships. Basically, what to take away from this is that a parasocial relationship is one wherein it is very one-sided, because one side controls basically everything. The only thing you can do when you're on the receiving end, like I said, of a parasocial relationship is just to leave if you want. There's not much you can do. You can maybe send a message that they might read, but you can really only just leave.
You're just along for the ride.
You are genuinely just along for the ride, because if you think about it, there are also these things called sort of parasocial breakups, which are sort of newer, I suppose, than parasocial relationships. But let's say you're watching a television show, as we do, and a character abruptly dies.
Oh yeah.
Oh no! Yeah. This character that I had this very close personal relationship with is suddenly just gone.
Straight away, Jenna Marbles.
Oh well, that's another thing. That was my other example of someone who suddenly stopped making content.
People were distraught.
Yeah. And I'm sure we all felt, Jenna Marbles has stopped making videos.
I don't think I believed it at first.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, she'll be here next week.
Honestly, I was not someone who consistently watched Jenna Marbles videos. I wasn't someone that every single week I was like, yep, it's Jenna time. But I was still like, oh man, there aren't any more coming. And that's the thing. The thing about these sort of interactions is that they can happen without you even really being fully aware of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I think is kind of a dangerous thing sometimes, if we're not necessarily aware of how we see these people that we don't necessarily know at all.
Yeah, I think it really stresses me out when people are like fans of something and they don't realize how like kind of screwed up their relationship with that person is. Like it's fine to acknowledge that you have this kind of relationship. It's fine to have it, I guess. But when it's getting to like the point where you're like, yes, I have a relationship with this person who doesn't know who I am, it's a bit like, please, 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 for your own well-being, acknowledge that it's not what's going on.
You see that a lot though in comments, don't you? People saying, oh, how could you do this to me? Or like,
yeah.
Oh, and you read them and you're like, I know for a fact that this person doesn't know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they don't, like, oh, I have this phobia, how could you do this to me? They don't know you.
Yeah.
They're not aware of your life or anything going on with you. So, you know, it's very easy to see this from the outside and be like, I know what's happening. That's a parasocial relationship. But
when you're in one, it does feel like a proper connection, like a real connection, even though.
Well, they are for all intents and purposes.
What makes you feel surely is probably similar to that of an actual relationship.
That's exactly the point.
100%.
Okay.
Especially if it's in like a online video format, because it's basically like you've had like tens and tens of conversations with this person. It's a one-way conversation, but it still feels like a conversation.
Well, this is the thing about vlogging, and I was going to get into this later, but let's get into it now. The thing about vlogging as well is that the whole sort of YouTube thing has really, I would say, made this a much easier thing to happen. Because obviously with TV shows, there's very much a sort of like, you can sometimes almost tell there's sort of a performance aspect to it. But with a YouTube video, I can be like, okay, so now I'm talking directly to you, the person that is watching and listening. Thank you for watching. No, thank you for watching. And suddenly I'm not speaking to an audience, a live studio audience or all of the people watching their TV. I'm speaking to the one individual person who is watching this video right now. Thank you. But like, do you know what I mean? So when it comes to YouTube and vlogging, not only do you get to hear sort of what seems to you the most intimate parts of someone's life, you also get to hear that in a way that feels like it's only being said to you. Although this is the thing, and this is the thing to be wary of, is that you, even though you think you know a lot about someone online because they share a lot, there are things that you don't know. The fact is that we have lots of friends that are very online, almost to a fault. And I'm sure that we all know things about our friends personally that just aren't on the internet. Not that they're bad things, not that they're good things.
They're always bad things.
No, not they're always
they're
bad
never
things.
Good.
Let it be known.
Just horrible people.
Just completely, like, they could be completely innocuous things that people just don't know on the internet because it's never made its way to the internet. And
everybody has to have boundaries.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, one of my boundaries is that, you know, I talk about how I don't like left-handed people all the time. Never mind, let's move on from that.
That is well known on this podcast.
That's not a boundary.
Corey despises left-handed people.
I like to keep that. I usually like to keep it to myself, but honestly, my hatred for them has just bubbled over.
Spilled out quite a few times on this podcast.
It
has, hasn't
it? Yeah. No, so I've been talking about...
But with parasocial relationships, though, just about that topic of boundaries, you're right. Sometimes it's not just people don't know. I think sometimes people are very aware of the fact that it is one-sided and it's a parasocial relationship, but they just get those boundaries confused. They're like, oh, because I know these aspects of your life, because you do videos like controversial opinions or, you know, Q&As, I know about this one thing that you did way back when, and now I feel entitled to speak to you as your friend would speak to you.
Oh my God. Which is always the case. Oh my God. I've had this a lot. I have this thing like when me and my friends, like, we take the piss out of each other, we're like, ha, you're a dickhead. But then I'll get like a message like that from someone who follows me, and I'll be like,
that's not your place.
No. like my friends will be like, love you, ugly. And then someone will DM me and be like, love you, you're so ugly. And I was like, no, like,
it's not how that works.
Why would you say that to me?
You get to do that because you're my friend. You're not my friend because you do that.
Yeah, so. Like, you don't become my friend by calling me ugly, if that's what you think is happening.
It worked for me. But anyway, so I was talking about parasocial relationships and parasocial interactions and parasocial breakups. Now, I just want to briefly touch on what the difference between those things are, or difference between those things is. Look, I don't know grammar. That's not my strong suit. So a parasocial interaction is, it's what it sounds like. It's just the interaction. Mm. It doesn't necessitate a parasocial relationship. So sort of any interaction where it's
this one
heavily... Yeah,
this one right now.
For anyone watching. Yeah, this
for
one
example,
right now.
You may be seeing Corey for the first time, absolutely hate him and not care about him after this whatsoever. That's
true.
A parasocial interaction.
Yes, Shava.
Wow, thank you for an example that not only explained it perfectly, but also hurt my feelings.
Cut a bit too deep.
No, so then a parasocial relationship is again, exactly what it sounds like. It's a relationship built up across those parasocial interactions. And a parasocial breakup is when that relationship suddenly ends and you don't really know why.
Oh.
Maybe you do.
Oh my God, let me do nice examples now because I feel bad. If you have a parasocial relationship, you might then love Corey so much that if you're figuring out what to do in a personal dilemma, you'd be like, what would Corey do? That's a parasocial relationship.
Oh my God.
And then
you ask him and he doesn't know how to respond. Because
he doesn't know
you.
Who you are.
It's terrifying.
I can promise you that what would Corey do is terrible advice in every situation. Every
the
single
answer
one.
Is the wrong thing.
I've never once done the right thing in my life.
Corey becomes Amish. He decides to get rid of all of his material belongings and live on a Tibetan mountain. I'm pretty sure I'm like horribly...
That's not where the Amish live
at all.
I'm so sorry.
Amish of the Tibet.
Was like a monk.
If you find an Amish person up a Tibetan mountain, please
they're
call
lost.
Help.
Please
help
them get home.
Help them. Put a little help. Sign
How did they
Amish?
Get there without any technology? Like
they got cleats.
I don't know why I said Amish. I meant a monk.
A monk.
But then, my point is, you never see Corey again.
Yeah.
And you feel really sad to the point where, actually, science has shown, you can experience genuine grief. Like, as if somebody close to you has passed away. Like Princess Diana.
God. Yeah.
When that happened, the parasocial relationships that people have with the royal family... It was so, like, just soul-destroying for so many people.
My mom cried for, like, 3 days when David Bowie died. Like, 3 days. She was like, I grew up with him. Like obviously, she knew that she wasn't friends with David Bowie. But, like, the impact that he had on her was that of, like, he was, like, a role model.
And it's not weird. It's not abnormal. That's why we need to know about these things. Because, you know, parasocial people do have really odd things that happen in our lives and influences. So. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. When celebrities die, I do often feel the outpouring of sort of emotion from people, I do often just kind of stand back and think, oh, this feels very odd for all these people that have never had any interaction. This, you know, obviously this person has touched their lives, but the way that they're grieving is as though they've known them personally, which is, it's interesting. And it's so odd that humans are we very much crave sort of relationships, don't we?
We are pathetic little attention
cravers. No, it's not a bad thing at all.
No, it's wonderful. We find relationships even when they're not there.
That's just the fact that if Pingu died, I'd be upset. Though.
Yeah, go for it.
This is my point. That's what I was just going to say.
If Pingu died, you'd be upset?
When I was younger, I would be upset. I would, but that's not what I was going to say. Okay. The very first movie that I ever cried to was E.T. Mm. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you know when he's
spoil
like...
E.T. It's been out for literally decades.
I think people have had time.
What are you doing with your life if you've not seen E.T.? But there's like this thing, the scene where like you think he's died and it's so sad. And there's like this tiny chubby little 8-year-old Sharpa sitting on the sofa watching this for the first time. And like just bawling. I like ran to the kitchen and cried because I was so embarrassed that I was crying over a prosthetic alien. Like, what is that? Like E.T. clearly doesn't know I exist. He doesn't even fucking exist. But yeah.
E.T. doesn't
think.
That's what happened.
E.T. doesn't even know I exist.
E.T. doesn't have a home.
It's like every single time I watch, whenever I watch Iron Man die, I'm just like,
oh, don't do that.
Oh, Iron Man, no.
No,
no, Mr. sir.
Now that was a spoiler.
Okay. If you have not seen Endgame, which is on Disney Plus, by the way, you have specifically tried to not see Endgame at this point.
Or you don't care.
Yeah. And either way, we've spoken about Iron Man dying many times on this podcast before. It's very difficult to get me to stop talking.
I think we've just spoiled the whole of the MCU for people.
No.
You could listen to this podcast and be up to date with what's happening.
I didn't spoil Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man
Far From Home, and how at the end, everyone finds out he's Spider-Man.
Oh, no!
So, who came up with the term parasocial interaction, parasocial relationship, and when did they come up with it? Shab has already pointed that out, but I will say it again. So, it was a duo.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's never bad.
It's never bad. So, it was coined by Horton, and should have read this name beforehand, Wall?
Yeah.
Wall.
Okay, in 1956. Donald Horton was an anthropologist, and R. Richard Wall, can't remember which one it is. Don't know if what I've got written down here is correct.
Richard begins with an R.
I know. That's why I'm confused.
I don't know if the R stands for Richard.
I'll just say R. Wall, okay? Was a sociologist. And he was also one of the first people to receive a degree in social science from Harvard, which I found in his obituary. Speaking of his obituary, he actually... he died shortly after they published this. So they published, their first essay. It was called Mass Communication and Parasocial Interaction, Observations on Intimacy at a Distance. That's what, the opening paragraph of which I read out at the start of this. That's where that comes from. Now, as I said, that was published in 1956. And Richard unfortunately died of cancer November 17th, 1957, which is about 2 days after this episode comes out. It will be, I think, 63 years to the day.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just to show you how long ago...
insane is that?
Yeah, right? Because
even before technology, we've had theatre, we've had celebrities or idols, we've had politicians. There was a recent paper that I read from this guy that I kind of idolise, Loki, who said that, from evidence, has found that parasocial interactions and relationships formed with Donald Trump could be a reason why he was elected president. And it makes so much sense. Absolutely. And I'm just like, holy crap, these relationships just eke into so many parts of our lives.
Well, there's a brilliant line from it in Hamilton, isn't there? I say isn't there, as though you know. So it's the election of, I think it's the election of 1800. What is it? He's basically the line is...
You're going to rap for us, Corey.
No, I'm not going to rap. It's basically saying, like, you could grab a beer with him. Like, oh, I'm going to vote for him because he seems like a nice guy. You could grab a beer with him. And that is, like, a reason that people have for voting for politicians.
I hear people say that all the time now.
Like, people are so stupid.
No, but, like, Obama. Like, Obama seems like a really chill guy.
Oh, to be fair.
Right? And you'd vote.
I could have a beer with him. Like, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. You can. See, you almost forget that he
all have parasocial relationships with Obama.
Yeah. You right? You almost forget
that. War crimes. War crimes.
You, yeah, exactly. You almost forget that he used drone strikes on innocent civilians because he seems like such a chill, cool dude.
This is a crazy situation, which has led to the catastrophe of like politics and society these past few years. The difference is with Trump. Trump was not a politician. If you think about the airtime and the exposure that politicians have, they're always in debates. They're always where you're criticizing them and looking at them through the lens of a politician. But Mr. Trump here, we know Trump as the guy that goes, you're fired. Because he has done The Apprentice in America for God knows how. Wait, was it The Apprentice? The Apprentice. For something ridiculous like 12 seasons. That is 12 whole seasons. How many hours have people developed a parasocial relationship with him, not as a politician on his views, but being like, holy shit, this guy's like a media mogul. This guy is an entrepreneur. This guy knows what he's doing. He's strong. I love him. He's funny. He's powerful. You know, he's just got so much airtime that no politicians have from this media celebrity personality. Yeah. And that is a very damaging thing, which is why, as stupid as it sounds, like Kanye West, people should have been worried about that and should continue to be worried about celebrities because they have a chance to develop a relationship that politicians would dream of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the thing as well. You really see that with Trump in the fact that people kind of see him as being a very down-to-earth... Well, they've obviously projected this onto him. They see him as sort of being a down-to-earth man of the people who says it like it is, despite the fact that he's a very, very wealthy man. You know, not for lack of trying. A very wealthy man. A very wealthy man who has... could not be any less down to earth. You know what I mean? Like, they've built up this sort of idea of him in their heads. They've got this sort of relationship with him and they vote him in for being president despite the fact that he's horribly unqualified. That's the thing. This is a very old idea is what I'm trying to say. And the thing is that actually, apparently, I've read this, I think, a couple places. Theater was slightly less effective in terms of parasocial relationships than television and sort of subsequent forms of media. Because if you think about it, theater exists kind of in the moment. When you go to see a play, you're kind of under, you know that it's actors there that are playing characters. You can almost separate yourself from that to an extent, especially if you're watching a sort of Brechtian play, because that's kind of the entire point. Whereas...
A what play?
A Brechtian play.
What?
Bertolt Brecht.
What's he what? Oh, what does that mean?
Bertolt Brecht, he was a playwright. He was a... I'm not going to... This is not a drama
lesson.
You can't
just say something and be like, you know, like this, and then expect me to know.
I'm not flexing. It's not to do with the main flexing. Point. Don't worry.
Okay,
it's
relevant. Okay.
It's relevant to the point. Oh, my Lord. Look, you have two...
We love you.
You have two main schools of thought when it comes to... You basically have two main schools of thought when it comes to sort of plays. You've got sort of Stanislavski's sort of idea of it, who was, doesn't matter who he is, Stanislavski's idea of it, and Bertolt Brecht's idea of it. Bertolt Brecht wants you to know that you're watching something that is a play. Okay. Stanislavski wants you to be immersed.
So
that's where that's what that is, okay? It's not science. It's not parasocial relationships. It's just something somewhat relevant.
Okay.
So, yeah, so, like, I mean, and that's probably why we've seen such a huge boom in sort of research on this. Because initially, as I said... this was done in 1956. And then one of the guys died. The other guy went ahead and got another bloke in and wrote another paper and published that, I think, in 1957. And that was it. No one really spoke about it for about 15 years. It just kind of laid low.
I find it really interesting that, like, theater was less effective at creating parasocial relationships, because I feel like I understand why, but I feel like if you're seeing a person,
I don't understand why, and they're directly... I'm not sure if that's entirely true.
I'm not saying that as an absolute fact. I'm saying I've read a couple people that have said that.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, just because I would have thought that, like, if you're there and in front of the person, it would be more likely to. But then I guess if you're there in front of the person, you can tell that they're acting and they're taking cues and they're walking on and off stage and all that.
Do you know what I'd like to know? So say, like, people have a parasocial relationship with Harry Potter.
Oh, God.
Let's forget J.K. Rowling. Okay? Let's just forget all about that stuff right now.
Can I just quickly say that there are some really, really good papers on this, which are actually linked in the description, about parasocial relations with Harry Potter. So you should check
specifically Harry Potter.
Specifically Harry Potter. Wow.
Yeah, multiple. Specifically Harry Potter.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry,
there's a really great one that's just come out specifically about Voldemort and like feeling parasocial connections with villains, which is really interesting. But my point was about the Harry Potter. Imagine having a relationship with Harry Potter and then imagine really liking Daniel Radcliffe, right? Surely your parasocial relationship with Daniel Radcliffe, the actor, would affect your parasocial relationship with Harry Potter. Now imagine Daniel Radcliffe comes out and says, like, he eats babies, right? Ah. You had it here first. Daniel Radcliffe eats babies. Will you still think of Harry Potter the same way?
I think yeah, I would think
he's
better
a character,
of
him. Isn't he?
The thing is that you even said, like, that he, forgetting J.K. Rowling for a minute, because your parasocial relationship with J.K. Rowling is obviously going to affect your relationship with her characters.
Yeah.
It's a little minefield, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember back in, like, 2014 Tumblr, people making posts like, oh, one day we're going to turn on the news and we're going to see that J.K. Rowling has passed away and we're all going to be very sad. And now kids are going to ask us, who was that? And we're going to have to explain to them. And I was like, oh, that's just aged poorly now, isn't it?
Tumblr's so stupid. One day this person I like will die.
Right. Tumblr thought Super Thulok was going to happen. So, like, they are very stupid. And by they, I mean we. I was one of them. So, as I said, this kind of died for 15 years. No one was really, you know, studying it very much.
No one took him seriously at all.
No, no. But then, obviously, this was back in the 50s, initially. So, as I said, about 15 years, nothing really happened. But over the course of those 15 years, media really started to change, didn't it? There was a lot more of it, if you understand me, in that, you know, there were a lot more TV stations, all of this stuff. So people were interacting with media a lot more frequently. And so you kind of see a rise in studies on this. So I've specifically got this fantastic, there was a really great article that I read that was basically looking at the past sort of 60 odd years of study on this. And so this graph I've got here, basically you can see that there weren't very many studies. You know, there were maybe less than five all throughout the sort of 70s, right the way up to the sort of mid-90s.
That's so interesting because, like, the Beatles were huge. I would have thought there'd be so much more interest in parasocial relationships, like, back then. Because,
really,
like, everybody
one,
had, like, an obsession with the Beatles. Like, people would pass out when they saw them. They'd, like...
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Boy
bands
was literally boy. I mean, the Beatles were basically kind of like
the first boy band. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy bands like live and die on parasocial relationships.
Yeah.
It's insane.
If you think logistically as well about like the 70s, that's the time where everything just became so much more accessible.
Yeah.
The poor man got the TV, you know, phones and newspapers and clickbait. That's when that sort of thing started. So yeah, that's really interesting.
So that and so obviously there was bear in mind, you've go from basically nothing between 1956 and 1972.
Jesus.
To like a few sort of sporadically, like sort of one or two studies published a year, to then the sort of 90s, which makes sense because bear in mind, the internet wasn't really the internet until sort of 90s. You know, the internet, the way that we think about it, the internet was initially sort of conceived as just a way to share information between people.
Here's how you send an email.
I will send an email for work because it is important for me to share information. Da, da, da. Scientists use it. And now the internet is a place where we are literally hosting this podcast.
Yeah.
And that kind of started in the 90s. So then you start to see a massive uptick. 1996, you've got over five, still under sort of 10. And that kind of carries the way through to the 2000s until you hit about 2008. And then that's when you start going above sort of 15 studies a year being published. And then I think it sort of peaks at about 30 in 2014. And this really only goes up to 2016.
Okay.
But you're peaking at sort of 30, 28 studies published per year.
Right.
And a study is like a long... It's a lot of people involved, right? It's
not it depends.
Just like, okay.
It depends.
Not always. But this is like peer-reviewed, like the proper stuff.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. It's not
good
just
scientific methods, actually saying what needs to be said, not lies, not, you know, just shit.
Yeah. there are a number of steps that one needs to go through to get this. You can't just decide to do it, usually. Some of these could have been reviews. In fact, some of them were... Oh, no, this isn't even counting reviews. So there are different types of papers that get published. Some of them are basically just reviews, which are look at other papers and say,
yeah,
this is what we find from other papers. But these are the numbers of studies like actual studies that use actual data that they've collected in order to sort of reach a conclusion. And it just explodes over that over the course of that time. And genuinely, this is sort of me coming up with my hypothesis. I think it probably has a lot to do with the advent of the sort of internet and, again, accessibility of
new age content. Internet. Yeah, exactly.
Because obviously as more content becomes more accessible, you'll probably see a lot more people forming those parasocial relationships because you've got more chances to...
Wait, when was... no one's going to know the answer to this. When was the show Catfish invented? Is that not somewhat of a parasocial relationship?
Or... Yeah, Noah, that's incredible. Yeah, the ones that don't like video or FaceTime, right? You like you grow in love, you fall in love with the idea of what someone perceives to be.
Yeah.
But the it show is was 2012. More...
It's more equal, I guess, other than someone withholding like their like actual information.
It's kind of weird because I feel like in a catfish situation, you fall in love with a person that doesn't exist. So it's your parasocial relationship isn't with the person you're speaking to, but the person they think they are.
Yeah, but like...
Does that make sense?
I guess, but I feel like with catfishes, someone could just be using a different picture and being completely authentic.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. They just end up being like a really large man in a seat. Pretending to be a skinny girl.
In a seat.
In a seat.
Well, skinny girls.
Reality is like K-pop, position. So.
Skinny girls never use seats. That's the first clue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nowadays it's not just... This is a lot of different people are sort of studying this. So it's not just people that are sort of trying to study entertainment, but people that are also looking into advertising effectiveness. You can understand why they'd be looking into that.
That's and, where most of it is. It sucks.
Well, that's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
It makes so much sense. And
that's what your job is predicated on.
I know.
For companies with a bottom line, but actually those relationships have the capacity for so much more, but no one's looking into it.
I mean, so there are some people I've seen that are use it for some kind of social good, which is
The name of my thesis.
Ah,
social media for social good. Don't steal that.
That's a really good name. Oh, that's the name of this. That's the name of this episode, by the way. Social media for don't.
We did it first.
But yeah, people that are studying sort of journalism are also studying this. It's a multidisciplinary sort of, topic, really.
Definitely.
Because it is so broad, you can adapt it to almost anything.
Yeah.
Where people are having those relationships, and they can have those relationships in almost sort of any scenario you can conceive of. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about how they form. Now, as far as I'm aware, we don't have a solid explanation of how exactly they form. Shaba, you might correct me on this. But there are a couple of proposed ideas that I found, neither of which have a lot of evidence behind them.
Okay.
So take this with a grain of salt.
Yes.
Because I'm not saying this is exclusively exactly how it works.
Please, people in the comments, he is not saying this is absolutely true.
Okay, so there are different models. I'm going to talk about two of them. The sort of ideas that people have got. So there's the first one is the absorption addiction model, which controversial to say the least. This was proposed in, I think, 2002. Basically, it was proposed by someone called McCutcheon. So she said basically that people engage in celebrity worship to sort of make up for something that's lacking in their life.
Oh my God.
Basically, if you're having trouble forming close relationships with people, or you've got poor mental health or a lack of identity or any of those sort of situations, apparently forming a parasocial relationship with a celebrity makes you feel like a more complete person.
I was just thinking in terms of, I was like, yeah, that's... I turned to the internet because I had bad mental health, and I didn't really want to relate to other people in person because obviously the trans thing. But it's, obviously it's controversial, but I can see where that comes from. Obviously, if you're not doing too good in the real world, you look for someone outside of it.
Who's doing well?
Yeah, I
onto that.
Or who might be like closer to what you're saying. So as you just said, Noah, like if you think about like someone in the middle of Texas who might be a young boy realizing that they're LGBT+, I'm sure that they won't have a lot of people in their local community that they feel they can relate to or speak to. But then at click a button, all of a sudden you can see like thousands of creators who talk about that experience.
But then bear in mind, obviously, trying to say that this is the only this is the only sort of mechanism for it would be almost silly, because this is something that people experience
regardless of whether
you know, they are having those feelings. And yeah, apparently then this is where it kind of goes a little bit off the rails, I think. Bear in mind, I'm not an expert on this. This is where I'm like, okay, you lost me here. So you basically, looking for that sort of satisfaction in celebrity worship, then makes someone focus intensively on the parasocial relationships. And then that just kind of feeds into itself. So you then want to get more and more attached to sort of the subject of the parasocial relationship.
It's a similar way of like, oh, I really like Harry Styles, so to feel closer to him, I will find out everything about him. I'll look through all his Wikipedia pages.
Exactly, his toenail on eBay.
Yeah.
In that kind of way.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Like getting really, at least as I understand it. Bear in mind, for anyone listening, this is not fact. I am not saying this is how this works. I'm explaining what someone has proposed, just so we can tear it down in a minute. I just know that someone will tune out, right, and then tune back in and be like, "Oh, this is how it works." It's not what I'm saying. So so that's the first stage of, that's where the absorption comes from. That's the absorption part. And then that sense of sort of like that good feeling that they get,
it's
from
addictive.
that good feeling that they get is addictive. And then they that apparently leads you to engage in behavior like stalking, or trying to get like mentally or physically closer to the celebrity, which I think is a really narrow view of parasocial relationships, because I don't think parasocial relationships are inherently unhealthy. I think this feels to me like pathologizing something that is almost an innate feature of human nature. Mm-hmm. In that,
this sounds like a boomer who just doesn't like social media.
Right? Right. Like, okay, put it
that's
this
actually what pisses me off about a lot of parasocial research. Like, everyone's like, oh, social media sucks, it's so bad for you, social media is addictive. Yeah, it is addictive. Actually, to be fair, studies have shown that social media is more addictive than drugs and alcohol. Mm. Like, it affects more people, it's significantly harder to pull away from. I get it. But it doesn't mean that the connections that you make are all bad.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I mean, this is the thing, right? Social media is more, I would argue, is more addictive than drugs and alcohol, because drugs and, well, alcohol is a drug. So drugs are addictive by chance almost, you know, they are because they just happen to sort of engage those pathways in the brain that sort of fuel addiction. Whereas social media is literally designed to be addictive.
Yeah.
It is like someone, if someone said, this is how
social
the human...
Social dilemma, anyone?
Yeah.
This is how people
that was
work.
Creepy.
Right?
Wasn't it?
This is how people work.
On Netflix. Oof.
Why don't we make a drug like that suits people exactly? And that drug is social media, because like, you know, all those... Like,
and stepping that one step further, it's let's do that so we can sell this and line our pockets with even more money. How disgusting is that?
But I also think it's interesting because... Obviously, yes, it's addicting, but at this point, nowadays, we're working towards everything being accessible online, to the point where if you're a kid and your school's on lockdown, you have to access Zoom and you have to be on the internet in order to learn. So it's that's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think...
it's not that scary, but...
Look, this is the thing. I think, ultimately, social media... And, okay, we are, in comparison to some of the people listening, we are... kind of old school when it comes to YouTube. I think all of us were watching YouTube back when it started and having...
Before it was cool.
Yeah, before it was cool.
Over a decade ago,
Oh my God, it was over a decade ago. Jesus. I've wasted my life on this hell site. Anyway, we were watching YouTube back when it was YouTube, back when it was people just sharing videos because it was fun.
Yeah.
There wasn't any money in it. There wasn't any... like huge profit. It wasn't even owned by Google back then. It was just YouTube, and social media is made to be addictive, but it doesn't inherently need to be addictive. And you can look at sort of YouTube way back when for that, or Facebook when that started, when it was just some awful way to rate women. You know, you can look at social media, all these sort of social media sites when they sort of began and they weren't focused on profit or the bottom line.
Yeah.
And it's only when they start focusing on how do we get people to stay on for as long as possible so we can maximize our profits that you start seeing them turn to the addiction models.
It's in like the design of apps as well. They're like the colors they use, like blue is supposed to be soothing and relaxing or whatever. And like,
There are whole longitudinal studies, not just done on that, but like the amount of font or like where you place your finger on your screen in order to scroll. Like, it's insane how much money is invested in, keeping people on phones.
There was something that I noticed with the Instagram did that was stupidly obvious and really wound me up. This was a few updates ago. You might notice that when you're on stories, right? When you're on Instagram stories.
I love how that's become a measure of time a few updates ago.
So when you're on Instagram stories, right? You click through, right? And you swipe off the last story.
Yeah.
They're sort of like, let's say there's six stories at the top of the page, right? Mm-hmm. If you've clicked through all those six stories and you swipe off, those six stories will be done. And that's all that's at the top of your page.
Yeah.
With an update, what they made it so that, like, if you swiped off of the stories, those six sort of watched stories would immediately be replaced by six unwatched stories.
Yeah.
Which was very frustrating to me because I cannot leave that top bar sort of full of stories that are unwatched. I need to watch all the stories, which is why I would swipe until I knew I was at the end of the bar, and then swipe off and I'd see they were all unwatched, and I'd ignore the ones that were off the screen. I'd see they were all watched. I'd ignore the ones that were off the screen,
right,
being unwatched.
I see.
They're on to you, Corey.
Oh no! But basically, what they update. They know that people like don't like leaving things unwatched, so they make it so that you cannot avoid seeing things that are unwatched. It's just little things like that. These little sort of things that they do to maximize the amount of time you spend on the app.
I thought you were going to talk about the new update where they've replaced the post button with the shop button.
No, that was a horrible thing where they didn't replace the post button with the shop button. What they did was they replaced the notifications button with the shop button. Yep. So initially they moved things around and had the notifications button roughly where it was before. People got used to clicking the notifications button to the point where it becomes muscle memory. Then they swap it around without saying anything, so that shopping button is there. So you're constantly clicking on the shopping bit.
I still keep pressing the shop button.
To your notifications.
Yeah.
People suddenly go to the shopping bit a lot, and you've probably got quite a few people that are like,
"Well, what a nice frog beanie by not Corey, colored in nice, beautiful colors that you should purchase."
Or perhaps even a Saigo's calendar if there is still some left. We don't know. I actually don't know. They might actually be sold out by now.
Buy their things.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. So,
you guys are doing exactly what I just said I did like about parasocial relationships. Yes. Using it for monetary gain.
But you get a lovely calendar. You get a lovely calendar with science facts.
It helps you. You can tell what day it is.
You need this
calendar. Don't buy into the facade, people. No, but still buy it. Just buy it because you like the product, not because you think you're close to Corey. That's the point, right?
Yeah, so that's essentially the sort of absorption addiction model. I don't really think it's a very good estimation of how this works. Sure, it could be an ideal sort of understanding of how it works for some people, but trying to claim that parasocial relationships all stem from a sort of
but they all lead to like stalkerism.
That's the sort of like saying that that's the one eventuality that everyone will suddenly get. It's not going to happen. I mean, if you've been on YouTube for 10 minutes, you know for a fact that not every single person that has a parasocial relationship is going to end up stalking someone.
Or maybe we just haven't given them enough time.
I would go as far to say that literally everybody has a parasocial relationship. I would find it really hard to find someone in today's society that didn't have one.
Someone that was a hermit. And this is the thing though, right? Trying to pathologize this and say that it's down to like something wrong with a person, I think is silly. Because I could draw a face on a pencil and tell you his name is Gary, snap the pencil and then burn it, and you'd be like, oh no, Gary. People will like form a relationship with anything.
I feel bad for Gary.
Yeah.
That's my parasocial relationship.
I used to feel bad for one of my umbrellas when I used the other one. So I'd every time it rained, I'd change umbrellas.
Yeah, I used to.
Because they had little bug eyes on them.
One used to was stuffed toys. You know?
Oh yeah, true.
I sleep with that all with my toys. Teddies.
It's just I feel bad. Oh my God, not even that. Like pencils, like other little things in my room that like I have multiple of. I'm like, oh God.
We personify everything.
Yeah, this pillow is going to feel bad if I'm not resting my head on it. I better use this pillow tonight because the other ones have had a lot of use recently.
I think there's a deeper level of trauma and need to strive for unhealthy levels of perfection that probably go into that. But sure, parasocial relationships can be a part.
You know, Shaba, I didn't invite you on here to psychoanalyze me. No, okay. So there's also the attachment theory explanation. So this is this is not a thing for Scottish people to say.
Bulby.
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 B-O-W-L-B-Y.
How do you say bowl, Corey?
Bowl? Yeah, but it could be bowl. It's bowl. It's bow.
It's Bowlby. Okay, it's Bowlby.
Okay, Bowlby. Jeez, guys. Bowlby's attachment theory. And essentially what this one is talking about is that sort of that people that didn't have a strong bond with a primary caregiver when they were young, trying to find a substitute for that as an adult.
See, I understand how that can be the case for some people, but trying to say that that's the case for people having like
this is what bothers me with some things in psychology. In that,
I will just say though, that is super super generalized. Like,
yeah.
I feel like sometimes it goes from research to papers to articles to how we interpret it, and that end result is just a huge sensationalized Chinese whisper.
Yeah. Mm. So that's what I was going to say. One of the things that bothers me about psychology is that sometimes you could be talking about something incredibly specific. And that can be, people can take that and generalize that out to everyone, which doesn't work because the human experience is incredibly varied. And we actually saw that, we kind of saw that a little bit in our Stockholm Syndrome episode, which we did recently. You should go check that one out.
Yeah.
Very good.
Where essentially sometimes you take things that happen to individual people and you try to say, let's see what is wrong with all people.
What do they have in common?
Yeah, like exactly. So, I think this sort of explanation, this sort of view of it is very, very generalized. So, you know, but that's not what we're talking about today.
Okay.
This is just a general overview of sort of one potential mechanism for it. But yeah, essentially, this sort of posits that people that have that sort of personality type, the sort of clingy or the ones that, you know, are seeking that sort of...
is this insecure avoidant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
They may be more susceptible to developing parasocial relationships.
Yeah, which
in this theory.
Which doesn't not make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't not make sense. You can't generalize that for everyone.
Yeah, but then this is the thing.
And I was just going to say, in our research, we went to VidCon with a bunch of iPads and got like quite a large sample. And my supervisor, bless her, was very right in saying this. She was like, Shaba, I would like you to add some measures in there to make sure that all of these people are normal. And by that, she meant like not weird loner geeks who just, not for any other reason. No.
Sample size of 300 down to 2.
But seriously, parasocial relationships exist with literally everybody. You don't have to be a certain type of person to experience one or their benefits.
I think the issue is that people see parasocial relationship and they think, that is what happens when someone has too strong of a connection to a YouTuber. Silly
I'm
person.
I'm not a stalker.
I'm not like that. Okay, then why did the entire country and also America completely upheave itself when Princess Diana died? This woman.
Or when Firefly was cancelled.
Yeah. Oh my God. No. Hold on. That's an actual reason to be upset because Firefly was.
What's Firefly?
The TV show. We'll watch it at some point. Okay. No, but like you know, these are the things. These are the things that people kind of don't really realize that you've got this connection to someone or this character.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because it's a parasocial relationship. Obviously, there are different sort of. Intensities of those relationships. You can take it to different levels, and some people can be more or less aware of it. But on some level, I genuinely do think everyone will like experiences this. In fact, if you find me someone that has no parasocial relationship, I will be surprised.
You said a hermit, Corey, but even somebody who's a hermit would have a parasocial relationship with the person they listen to on the radio or the weather person. You know, like whoever you see.
I was just thinking, like, people even have. Like their favorite football team and their favorite players, like could they form relationships, like parasocial relationships?
1,000%. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's mental. And this is almost tangentially related. I love this sort of idea with football clubs where people say, oh yeah, we beat, beat Rangers last night.
Yeah. You did. Like, fuck all, mate.
You sat on your arse, bro. You sat on your arse and ate a pie, man. You were not doing anything to get that ball in that goal. But no, I think it's really interesting that the way that like this kind of opens up this whole idea of people, how people relate to other people and how much we want to relate to other things.
Like, there's a whole bunch of science on that. It's called intergroup relations theory. But you're so right, and the two do go hand in hand. That's what the study we're just designing is, and that's my point. Like, parasocial relationships have so much capacity beyond. Putting money in business pockets to do good, specifically because of what you're saying, and not just footballers eating pies.
So I'm going to talk about so there are these two people called Giles and Maltby. I keep on looking at Shava when I say names because I'm like, am I saying the most disgraced person in this field?
That I just no, these are great papers. I know what you're going to say. Go you.
Okay, cool. So this is the 2006 paper, and actually, what Shabba's going to tell me now is that the 2006 paper is the one where they went completely off the rails, and I should be on the 2004 paper. No, the 2006 paper. So they basically identified three different levels of celebrity worship using something called the Celebrity Attitude Scale. This was in this was a big survey they did, basically. So stage one is entertain social. This is basically... most people engage in parasocial relationships like this at some point in their lives, apparently. Most people engage in parasocial relationships at some point in their lives, but mm-hmm. the majority of people will stay on this first level, okay. the entertainment social level. Basically, you see them as a source of entertainment or as a topic for like fun gossip. Like, okay, think about it like sort of, oh, I like watching this person on the TV, and also little gossip magazine.
It's like the way people talk about Graham Norton and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, did you watch Graham Norton last night? Oh, we had this person.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of friendly gossip.
Yeah.
But you don't see yourself as sort of being like attached to them in any sort of really meaningful way.
Yeah.
And then there's stage two, which is intense personal. And that's, you dig a little deeper with that one. This is in this case, you can see them potentially as a sort of soulmate or have a really strong interest in their personal life. You want to know about their dress sense, their likes and their dislikes, all of the sort of things that they like, all of the sort of things that you would know about a friend. You want to know about this person.
This was me with Bill Skarsgård in 2017.
Oh, I forgot about that.
No, I didn't reach level three, actually. Thank you. Is that what you're going to say?
No, you literally reached level three.
Oh, God, what is level three?
So, just to finish level two. So stage two is basically being obsessed with every tiny little detail, right? And then stage three is borderline pathological.
No.
At this point, you take it to the farthest extreme. You have obsessive fantasies about the celebrity. spend lot of money on sort of memorabilia.
No. I printed out pictures for free.
Did you have money to spend?
Did I have money to spend?
Yeah.
I had money. Wait. Okay. Just because I had money doesn't mean I spent it on Bill Skarsgård. What's the point?
Well, look, if you didn't have money to spend and you didn't spend money, then you know, that's different than having money and not spending
it. I had money
to
spend on Bill Skarsgård.
Okay, that's fine.
I just didn't give it.
I think we need a stage 2.5 here. So, so you spend a lot of money. You can even start stalking them. And this is the point. And, this is the thing. I almost disagree with this here. So it also says that at this point, it's usual for people to think that if they met the person, that their feelings would be reciprocated.
Oh, no.
But here's the thing, right? That's stage three. Now, here's the thing. I think that most of these stages, most people would think that if they met the sort of topic of their sort of parasocial relationship, that they would think, oh yeah, we'd get on. I genuinely think that
terrifying.
No, but I
have something to say here.
Yeah, go on.
And you're gonna be like, no, you lie. I'm doing this from a scientific point of view, so I'm not lying, I swear to you.
No, go on.
In a paper that I'm literally about to publish, we found exactly that. It was so bizarre. So just to clarify and put it on the record as well, Noah, you're not stage three. That is a realm of like stalker.
I didn't.
But no, seriously, we took a huge sample. We had like thousands and thousands of people in this study, and it really did find that for people who know that the other people don't even know who you are, like by name, and in some circumstances are literally fake. So some of the people that they nominated having like a strong parasocial tie with would be like, I'm trying to think of like animation YouTubers, like the odd one out.
Honestly, not real
people. You know, Homer Simpson, he literally does not have the capacity to know that you exist. He is fake. I'm sorry, Corey, to burst your bubble.
Oh, no, I was thinking about, no, Jamp pointed at me when you said Homer Simpson, as though, and I had to think, would I get on with Homer Simpson?
No, probably not.
You would.
I literally could not. I could not spend any time with any of the Simpsons family. Not even Lisa.
Really? Not even Lisa?
She is so up herself.
Bro, I think you're kidding yourself.
Put me in a room with Lisa. No, Homer Simpson is too stupid and too just much of a pain.
He's so lovable.
You would love Homer because he's like a middle-aged man that is dumb and generally just quite loving.
Yeah.
Like he's just a sweet, dumb, like middle-aged man. That's your thing.
I can't believe you wouldn't get on. I'd love to spend a day with Homer Simpson.
He's pig-headed. No.
Oh, that's right there, Noah. Oh my gosh, you just did it.
No, I know I'm doing it. I am 100% aware.
I want it to be absolutely clear, by the way. Like, people that have been listening to this show for a long time know that The Simpsons is my favorite show. Yes. If you get the calendar and you spot The Simpsons reference, send it to me.
Did you put a bloody Simpsons reference in the calendar?
And then he said, Noah, look what I did. He was so excited about
it. Does Luke know?
It's very obscure.
He's going to be shocked to find out.
There's also a Pokemon reference in there as well.
Oh, that's fine.
It's an incredibly obvious one. But no, like, The Simpsons is like my favorite show. But I genuinely do not think I could spend more than 20 minutes around any of the characters. I could not
but
do
again,
it.
Again, you're only saying this too because of a parasocial relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe one that's less favorable, but it still exists.
No, absolutely true. Yeah.
But so, if you look at like in-life relationships, there are close ties with like our close friends, best friends, sisters, brothers, blah, blah, blah. And then there are weak ties with like acquaintances, colleagues that we don't know very well. With parasocial relationships, particularly the ones that are strong, people were actually, they found greater perceived closeness and greater perceived responsiveness to these fake people or these people who don't know that they exist than the weak ties in their real life. So from the results that we found, they honestly felt that a YouTuber would like them more, respect them more, esteem them more than their actual colleagues, neighbors, and people in their community that have two-way interactions with them.
I can understand where that's come from, though, because like with your colleagues, you don't choose them as their... as like to be close to, they're kind of just there, but like
if you don't disclose as much.
Yeah, but also if you feel an attachment to a certain character, it's probably because you identify with them some way, or it's like a idealized version of yourself. So of course you're going to be like, oh yeah, well we'd get on because I want to be like them, whereas like your colleagues are just like there.
Or they're like me, they'll love me. Yeah, they'll think I'm so cool. We'll be best friends.
That's people liking your videos because you talk about trans stuff, and then them being like, oh, I have those similar experiences. Therefore, Noah and I would really connect. When actually,
no, I know it's terrifying.
You're almost ignoring the fact that this is one very small aspect of, you know, all of the things that make up you, and sharing just sharing that one sort of connection is not enough to sustain a relationship.
Yeah,
and it's just I find it really interesting.
I can confirm Noah's a dick in real life.
Ah, you tell lies. You said nice things about me on Instagram. I saw them.
Yeah, that's called virtue signaling, Noah. No, but it's I don't know. It's the thing is though. I think this is really why they say don't meet your heroes. Not because they all turn out to be awful. But because
they're an idealized version of what you want them to be. They're not actually.
Yeah. You're going to meet them and they're going to be just a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
their social relationship can only go so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the thing. If you try and turn a parasocial relationship into a normal relationship, an interpersonal relationship, there's going to be sort of friction there. There's going to be, actually, you should do more studies on that. I mean, it's going to be really bloody difficult.
Yeah.
But
there have been a few people who have done it though. Like I especially in this community, you have to admit, you've seen people who like, and I don't mean this badly. Like I honestly, I love parasocial relationships. I think they're great. I don't find them terrifying until people cross boundaries, as you said, get to that stage three. But there's so many benefits that have been gained from either side. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
But that's my point. There are people who are there who like you see in our community who started off as like fangirls or fanboys.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, little fans who are now like very integrated and they're like, oh, my dreams have come true.
The first meetup I ever did, I made like some of my best friends.
Yeah.
And so, came.
Some of my
like,
closest friends are people that I watch online or who watch me online.
But the difference is they don't cross those boundaries. Like that's where
think this is gonna sound odd. I think we're in a very odd position.
Yeah, I was gonna say I feel like we've all experienced.
Well, so for example, there are friends that you've got, Shabba, that you're quite close with, right? That we've sort of briefly met here and there.
Mm.
But our primary interaction with those people would be through watching them in your videos or in their videos. And you've then got this very weird sort of, it's this very weird sort of scenario where It's very much a parasocial relationship, but also you're friends with them, and it's like
it's parasocial relationship one step removed.
Yeah, exactly. There's also this other step that you don't get in most other sort of parasocial relationships. It's just being in that sort of like web of connectedness is very odd.
Yeah,
I guess actually it's the same as kind of following a friend of a friend on Instagram. You know?
Yeah. Just because they're attractive.
Well, like those people. Who I was gonna say more like those people that we know on Facebook. Like I'm still friends on Facebook with people from like secondary school who I have no idea who the frick they are,
yeah,
what they're doing. But like I know so much about some of their lives. Like the one's going into rehab, she's got a really cute dog, and I'm like, this is not really things that I should know about someone.
No. Oh,
that's a case where like a sort of interpersonal relationship turns into a parasocial relationship. Just
the other way.
Yeah. Over that's so interesting.
Oh my god,
they're
even
very
like
fluid.
People used to have pen pals back in the day, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Would that be like a form of... Oh my god, that's
well,
so cool.
Well, no, actually, because it's mutual self-disclosure.
Yeah.
So
oh, true,
an interpersonal relationship that you can't see. But that's if people can take away one thing from parasocial relationships and understanding them, I wish it was that there are so many similarities between the two and there's so much that we're yet to see because it's not what's profitable.
Yeah.
You know, people don't look into that because it doesn't make money. I mean, some people do. I'm doing that and there's a cute, tiny little bubble of parasocial research that is. But they are good and they shouldn't be stigmatized as long as they're not taken too far.
Yeah.
Because we all have them. We just need to embrace it and learn a bit more about it and use it for good.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it, where we find out about that, we kind of look at this thing and we think, oh yes, it's only people who are sick that have it. Oh, wait, no. Actually, we all do this.
We all have it.
I think we're all sick.
Yeah. I love that.
So why don't we get onto parasocial relationships and social media? We spoke about it just a little bit before, but I've actually got this really good study that I found.
Okay.
So it was a study on beauty vloggers. I don't know any beauty
Tell
vloggers.
Tell me which one.
I don't, it does, unfortunately, the study did not say.
Okay.
No, I don't actually know. It was. It took, it basically... The idea is they took three groups. They took sort of big YouTube beauty vloggers, like with 2 million or more subscribers, and then sort of what they decided to be average ones with 100,000 to 250,000 subscribers. Oh, yeah. So anyone watching that has
just your average
in that range,
vlogger?
Your average. I don't know. It's interesting, though, to me, though, that scientists were like, they had to decide what is the average number, like what's like a decent number of YouTube subscribers.
Well, were they not just doing like macro influencers and micro influencers? And
that's
then,
what I was gonna say. Yeah. I think that happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've got celebrity from like 2 million and above. I think that's the standard.
Oh yeah.
Well, actually, celebrities are 10,000 and above nowadays.
Oh, shut up! You just want to be celebrity so bad.
Okay.
According to the ASA, you are. Like a celebrity or an influencer, whatever, if you've got 10,000 or more.
I thought it was 30,000.
Really?
Is it 30? Oh, it's 30,000. 30,000, sorry. You're right. So they did a study on beauty vloggers. Okay.
Yeah.
They had three groups of sort of videos that they showed participants.
Mm-hmm.
The control was just videos of animals, yes, not speaking.
Right.
Because obviously people will connect with anything. So the animals not speaking in order to limit as much as possible parasocial interactions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they had sort of moderately sized vloggers, 100,000 to 250,000 subscribers. They showed them videos from them. And vloggers with 2 million or more subscribers.
Yes.
The boosts.
Now, there were, I think, three sets. Each set had three groups. And each group had 30 people in it.
What?
Okay, so 90 per condition.
90, yeah.
Okay, and there were three different... Okay.
I see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so that all adds up to 270.
Yes.
And each group only watched one set of videos, if that makes sense. So
yes.
Mm-hmm.
One group watched the control, one group watched the 150 to 100,000, you know, and the other one watched the 2 million plus.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. In these videos, they were basically, the beauty vloggers were, you know, using products, seeing whether or not they'd want to buy them again.
Mm.
You know, standard beauty vlogger stuff, putting on makeup. And all the videos were roughly the same length, I think about 5 to 7 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
And all the participants were roughly, you know, the same age, sort of college students, the average age for beauty vlogger viewers, 18 to 27. although most of them were 19 to 22 years old. And so what they found from, you know, showing them all these videos and seeing what happened, basically, was that the people saw the sort of YouTube vloggers as a credible source, regardless of how popular they were. So whether you've got 2 million subscribers or 100,000 subscribers, people watching you will be like, yeah, I trust you.
These people didn't know that these YouTubers had, they didn't know the amount of subscribers the YouTubers had, did they?
Yes, they did.
They must have, right, if they were listening.
Yeah, they did. But they didn't know any of the vloggers beforehand.
Yeah.
Right, okay, cool.
So they went in not knowing them. But I think they were told.
So they just thought, wow, you're legit, so you must be saying good shit.
Yeah.
Which is just so damaging. Yeah. Oh my God, well, people.
This is the thing. I mean, it's the... Okay, so they also... over half of them said that they would apparently purchase whatever products they
were using.
Over half, 53%.
I don't think... I guess...
Said they would purchase... They would probably purchase one of the items that were being used. And then, yeah, essentially, they also kind of formed... They clearly formed some kind of... relationship or not relationship they had some kind of parasocial interaction with these people, and this whole study was basically to kind of look and see how much sort of influence, like how many how much subscriber number affects these things
and influence behavior out,
thank you Chaba, but basically the most important practical implications that they found were that promoting business or products through parasocial relationships works, which we all know. Mm-hmm. The fact that channel size is pretty much irrelevant; it doesn't really matter. The fact is that you want to look for channels that have got sort of people who are invested in the sort of channel runner.
Well, it's true, right? That's why we've noticed like a commentary in the past few years of micro influencers getting more work, because people realize that the people that follow them, like the tiny creators that I follow, I love, I'm obsessed with, I watch their vlogs, I want to know what's in their lives. But then, like, okay, I also follow Alfie Days just because he promotes something, I'm less likely to buy it.
But then,
you know,
that's the thing, if you follow someone smaller, it's more likely because you actually care about them, whereas you follow
just
someone bigger,
you're trying to keep in touch,
be in the loop, and also, you know, when you follow someone smaller, that relationship feels more real, because when they say you, they're not saying you to 5 million people. They're saying it to 5,000, you know? And actually, I think another reason that they want to go for micro influencers more nowadays is because you can really underpay them. And actually, if they are slightly, if they're like even roughly the same amount of effectiveness, you could probably pay them less than you'd have to pay larger influencers who probably have management to, like,
they're missing a trick there.
Set checks and balances. And so the last thing that they said as well was that what you want to do if you're a brand is to identify YouTubers that are as close to possible, close as possible to your sort of voice and values, and that way you can really connect with the targeted audiences. And essentially what I want to what I'm getting from this, and what I wanted to bring to you guys from this, is that the studies on sort of YouTubers and the sort of internet and how social media affects parasocial relationships, a lot of it is to do with advertising.
99% are in business journals, commercial journals. That is the only reason I did this PhD.
Yeah.
Legit.
But yeah, that is where most of the studies seem to be. And Chaba, you think that we've got sort of better routes to take with this, or better options.
Can I highlight? Do you want me to highlight some of the benefits that we've got that are not commercial from parasocial relationships?
Yes,
maybe that'll make people feel happier about having them.
Yeah.
So actually this is a new one that we did, but yeah, sorry, it's not like peer reviewed yet, but again, you can trust me.
Why? Because they look up to you? Influencer?
good one. Okay, fine, don't trust me, look at the research when it comes out. But no, we looked at emotionships. So the idea of emotionships stems from our primal need to be happy. Happiness is something that it's just a purpose of life, right? We want to be happy. And the people that we connect with give us more happiness than even money or fame. Helly well to us, that it's a legit thing. And emotionships is the idea from Chung, if you want to look at the paper, 2015, I think, that the reason that we have relationships with anybody, even interpersonally in our real lives, is because they fill an emotional need. When we're sad, we want someone to share that sadness. When we're happy, we want someone to amplify that happiness. And the more emotionships that we have is actually more important than having one strong one. This is like quantity over quality.
Yeah, interesting.
Isn't that crazy? So like studies have actually found that women, for example, tend to fare better because women, again, this is based on stereotypes, but stereotypes exist because they're true. They fare better in bereavement circumstances or divorces because they have more people that they rely on, whereas men tend to form connections with only a few people.
Yeah.
And then when they lose those connections, they're kind of screwed in terms of their emotions.
Yeah.
But then, Baron, to be fair, with men and women, a lot of that thing comes from socialization.
Socialized that way.
Yeah. Sorry, I heard myself say that a lot of stereotypes are true, and I cringed at myself. Don't take that out of context, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, it's a stereotype for a reason.
No, just if Shabba wants to clarify for anyone listening.
Yeah, no, you're so right. Just like in terms of scientific behavior, it's just seen and proven that women socialize with more people than men. That's what I meant by that.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
That makes sense.
But parasocial relationships in that, again, have a really strong effect. So they're super effective, even sometimes as much as our strong ties. So in terms of making us happier, our sample found that a YouTuber that you have a really strong connection with can make you just as happy as your best friend or your spouse.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because especially with like musicians, like you hear like the fans being like, oh my God, you saved my life. But I guess if the connection that they get from somebody like that they've never even met is as strong as that, from a strong relationship, that's so interesting.
That's true. Honestly, not just in terms of purchase,
that like it makes us happy. The connections we have, they serve a purpose. They make us happy. They make us feel less embarrassed when we feel guilty. They make us calm down when we're angry. You know, it's all good things.
Go on.
I was going to say, beyond emotion, it's also changed our behavior quite a lot. So there was like a Rwandan soap opera on a radio show, which is crazy to think that they have radio soap operas.
Yeah.
But it was about like a family that did that had experiences with HIV. And after that, they actually found that in that area where people listened to it, there was a significant increase in the use of condoms and a significant decrease in bad sexual health behavior.
Right. Wow.
They've done like music videos with a lot of Muslim people that have bettered the attitudes towards Muslim people. Mo Salah, he's like a really important football player, right?
I don't think any of us are football.
Oh. I know the name.
I feel like maybe he's Egyptian. I think I read that in the study, but he identifies as a Muslim. And in an area, I think it was Liverpool, on Twitter, they scraped all the data and Islamophobia on Twitter reduced by over 50% in that time that he was signed. Wow. So this idea of a parasocial relationship can have such huge effects on making society a better place.
That's so crazy. Incredible. I was just thinking, like something you said there made me think about how people look at fame as being something that they want because they're like, oh, it must make you really happy.
Mm.
And I think maybe I'm really behind on this. I think I've just realized why generally people think, oh, fame must be great because so many people know and like you.
Mm.
Without realizing that actually all of those people that know and like you on the other side, when you are the famous person, you don't know them. They may as well not exist. You've still got your normal group of friends or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, don't have any of those connections that people seem to think that you've got because everyone knows you.
But they probably see the fact that like in their relationships, like in real life, the more people that they know, the more happiness they get from those people. They'll be like, oh, that must what fame feels like because there's all these people that like you. Well, in fact, like that's not the same.
Exactly.
And the free stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the free stuff.
Oh, the free stuff. Absolutely. The free stuff is great. But like, yeah, that's the thing. I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. This is something that I've heard a lot online, and this is okay. I've actually finished pretty much all of the actual content I've got. I just want to have a chat with you guys about this because there are some things that I've heard about online. I just want to see what you guys think.
Yeah.
Sort of responsibility for parasocial relationships. Now, we've heard a lot, obviously, that creators can sort of, I guess,
manipulate,
yeah, and abuse their parasocial relationship that they've got, relationship that sort of viewers have got with them, and it opens up all these conversations about who really is responsible for those parasocial relationships, and I think some people seem to think that it's entirely down to the creator, but I was wondering what you guys think about that.
I think it depends on how the creator is like upholding themselves on the internet. Obviously, if they're like, if you buy this thing, I'll love you. Like, I don't know you, but I love you. And if you buy this, it will bring me so much happiness that I will love you even more. I think obviously when you're in that position there's a level of responsibility, but I don't think you can blame someone who's just like talking. So like, for example, like I've had people like, no, I don't know where I'm going.
I actually don't know. I know what you're talking about, because I think what you're trying to say is like the fact that people will have a parasocial relationship regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
You can sort of, you can feed into it. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. even if you try your hardest to build that wall, those parasocial relationships will still exist.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Like the amount of times that I've tried to set boundaries, I've been like, hey, like this is okay, this isn't okay. People are going to cross them regardless of whether I tell them to or not. I think
I've had people talking about my weight and the way that I look as though they're my friends, being like, you could stand to do this, or
I had that the other
I don't know if that looks good. And I'm like, okay,
look. I saw you got that.
I had that comment the other day. They were just like, you're looking chubby, like we care about your health. First off, I'm not chubby. Nothing wrong with being chubby, but like this person was like projecting their own things. But they're like, we're just looking out for you. And they cross this boundary where they're like, oh, like we're friends. Mm. But that's not the fault of the person who's been given that advice. It's unwarranted.
Can I just play devil's advocate there? Just what you were saying, though, I completely agree for the context of you all. But I just want to point out, have you heard of Eugenia? I don't know if I'm saying
Eugenia Cooney, yeah.
Right. And I think she ended up seeking treatment, right? Because there was like loads of people that did almost like an online love intervention to be like, we love you, you need to look after yourself.
Yeah.
Mm. But I think, where it's warranted. There's
I think a lot of that was hate-based, though.
Yeah,
she was getting a lot of negative comments of people being like, you should leave the internet. She was getting like,
I think, to be honest, I even see this. Speaking about this sort of negativity dressed up as positivity, all stemming from parasocial relationships, you see this. I've written an entire video on this that I've yet to film. Essentially, people used to cancel people, right?
Yeah,
that was seen as a let's cancel this person. And that's kind of changed now to being holding someone accountable. And holding someone accountable is something that only the best and the best and closest fans do, because they really care about the person more than anyone else. And what that results in is the overwhelming positivity of, hey, Noah, we just want to hold you accountable for these things that you've done. And it turns into like this constant negativity of bringing up every single thing that you might have done wrong.
Yeah.
And so it seems like people, in these situations, it seems like people can be really positive by saying like, hey, we're just trying to help you because we care about you. Mm-hmm. But actually it turns out that's just sort of a mask for negativity. Yeah. And it's this kind of like this imagined closeness to someone.
But yeah. I think a lot of time it is meant well.
Oh no, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, yeah. Like these are obviously what we're talking about in terms of like in these sort of extreme bad cases. They are edge cases.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I wouldn't say to anyone sort of listening or watching that you need to like never try and say anything nice to someone that you admire online again. Mm. No, I just think that it's you need to be, I think we all need to be kind of cautious about
definitely
where we see ourselves in regards to the people that we interact with online.
Well, I think obviously, yeah, but there are boundaries on both sides as well. Like there are boundaries in which like followers or fans will cross a boundary, but I also think creators can absolutely do that.
Yeah,
definitely. I think a lot of those are to do with greed and money, and as you said, fame. Yeah. Like changing your opinions, or you know, I'm not going to name names, but some people who have great presence have gone and spoken with other people, have given them scripts of things to say, and they've completely diminished their online persona for the purpose of social climbing.
Yeah.
Then you have some people who will say, hey, buy this product, I really love it, even if you've never used it before. Like, that's not okay.
I just think that, like, the thing is, right, I think that ultimately creators can totally abuse that relationship, and there is an extreme responsibility on that end to set the boundaries as much as you can. But I
ultimately have the most power in that relationship.
You do have the most power in that relationship, but also I think that I think that some things that there are things that people aren't necessarily aware of that people should be aware of terms of like having that power in that relationship doesn't necessarily mean you always have control of the situation.
Yeah.
For example, if you were say at a convention or a meetup and someone was crossing those boundaries, it could be very difficult for you to set those boundaries again without really, really hurting that person's feelings or irritating them, because they see you as friends. And when you set those boundaries, they see that as, they may feel as though that's like you're sort of you
being a dick
to them, because what are you doing? We're mates and you're like, you're setting this kind of boundary that you should. Exactly. So I think that people can be very, very critical of creators on this front. And don't get me wrong, there are creators that absolutely abuse it. And not just for sort of the sort of greed and money and fame sort of thing, but literally like in the most sort of disgusting, selfish ways to get things from their followers. That absolutely exists. But I don't think that necessarily, I don't think everyone should be tarred with the same brush.
No.
In terms of like, there are sort of creators that sort of abuse that.
Yeah.
And there are people that follow them that that cross boundaries.
Yeah, I think it's to quote Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. Although it is very difficult to know what to do in a situation where you've got like a lot of people following your word, there are instances where like you do need to be more wary, whether you like it or not, of what you're doing online and the way you're speaking to people online.
We've seen that so much online.
Yeah, because like
it's not quite cancel culture, but accountability is important.
Yeah, absolutely. But even for stuff like even being wary, like a few years ago, I would post a hate comment and leave the username of the hate comment in the tweet, and obviously that could send people over to hate that person. So even in instances like that, like there's always going to be some level of responsibility that's held either between you or the person experiencing the parasocial interaction. But I think it's never just black and white.
Even in the more subtle ways though, like there have been studies designed to show that, you know, making eye contact to the camera is very different to looking away. Addressing people with certain terminologies or using hands even to gesticulate, all of this can increase the strength between like how a bond is formed. But like, if you're then going to call people online your friends, be careful when you do that. If you're going to say love you, you know, just be careful, because
that's a scary one, because I get like people being like, hi, can you, like, it's my friend's birthday tomorrow, can you send me a video saying like, hi, I love you? And I'm like, I understand.
I do it all the time.
I know, but
if someone subscribes to us on Twitch, I'll be like, thank you so much, love you, or at the end of my videos, much love.
But I try on rare occasions I've said it, but sometimes I'm just like, hope you're doing good. Like it's a thing where like I'm so hyper aware of like the interaction between me and someone that like is experiencing.
I think we need to be clear again. This is for the minority, because there are the absolute minority of people that will take things that you like, take that sort of thing, and will really hold on to it. Whereas the majority of people, they can hear that and they can understand, oh yeah, that's, you know.
And let's
that's
not
fine.
Forget, as creators, we have a parasocial connection too. Whether it be to that little number, like the idea, the group, the community of followers, that's why we're asking, you know, like, how are you doing? Let me know what you think, because we do genuinely care.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Know, we have a relationship with the abstract concept of our audience.
This is the thing. I feel really sorry for the people that have, because I've seen this with a few people recently, where people just blow up. It happens every now and then. Someone will just blow up and suddenly have a lot of sort of followers or subscribers. And suddenly you're thrust into this world of more responsibility than you sort of expected to have.
There's more to it than just picking up a camera and being a prat.
Yeah.
And like, and I'm not talking about myself at all here, obviously. I'm not trying to say that at all. I've genuinely seen people that are sort of unequipped to deal with like all of the things that you need to deal with when suddenly like thousands, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people are looking to you for some kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I feel like we should, I genuinely feel like we should probably be a little more understanding of the people that that aren't necessarily equipped to deal with that. Because realistically, who is truly equipped to deal with that kind of sort of interaction?
I don't want it to be like, oh, poor creators, but at the same time I think especially what I've learned today is that it's more complex, like the interaction between like a creator and their audience and the parasocial interactions going on, they're more complex than maybe even definitely. I would have thought about.
The relationship might be one-sided, but the effects are definitely felt two-way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Your creators are affected by the things you say. Whether they're nice or not.
You're so right. Whether that be like hate comments, you know, that might really put you in a depressive state. Like, I can't tell you, not necessarily now, but like in the early days, Jamie in particular got really hard hit. You know, there'd be days where he would go into a dark space and not return for a while because he's worried about what some people have said.
Yeah.
You know, people who he doesn't know and will never probably meet, you know.
Yeah.
But even not just that, things like people asking you for help. I've had people, I'm sure we've all experienced this at some point, because we disclose very vulnerable things about our minority identities, where they'll be like, my life depends on you answering this, you know? Mm. Or, hey, answer this question for me that in reality, only a qualified professional would be able to help me with.
Yeah.
It's just not your place, you know? And it's only with awareness of what this relationship actually is, understanding its benefits, but also seeing what it can't do, that we'll be able to sort of manage those effectively.
Yeah, I wish it was discussed more online, because I remember, I think I brought it up once, and I must have worded it in a way that, like, came off wrong, but people were just like, are you saying that, like, this person hates their fans? Are you saying that, like, you hate your fans? I'm like, no. I'm just saying it's more complex than, like, you thinking you know this person when you don't. It's like there's so much going on that, like, obviously someone that isn't in that situation wouldn't understand.
And that's the
thing. You just know that's what people are going to say.
Yeah. And before people are like, oh, poor creators, the thing is that this does go both ways. Someone who's ill-equipped to deal with this sort of relationship, it doesn't just harm them, it harms the people that follow them as well, because if you're not equipped to set those boundaries, then there are people who very much need those boundaries to be set, that will exacerbate that sort of parasocial relationship that they've got, and it can lead to those sort of messages where it's like, my life depends on this, and all of those feelings. So it's sort of it's not just, oh, poor creator, this affects literally everyone involved. Yeah. Like you said, it's just because it's one way doesn't mean it doesn't affect everyone, you know? Yeah.
You can see it though. There's going to be one person who walks away from this and go, Noah, Corey, Sharp and Jamp, they don't care about us. They just see us as numbers.
I am one of you, just not for me.
That's right? Not what we're saying at all. It's just, you know, don't look at this relationship through rose-tinted glasses. We know where we stand. Yeah. You should know where you stand. And we can still coexist. We can still be internet friends, right?
Yeah.
But it's different to interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like this is the thing. I think one of the reasons that I want to do this episode, and one of the reasons that I want to bring you in for it specifically, is because you know a lot more about parasocial relationships than most people on the internet right now. In fact, I would hazard a guess that of pretty much anyone that does, pretty much like anyone that does YouTube, you probably know the most, you know, especially in our extended circle.
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
In our circle, yeah, I would probably agree. Because I listen to some people like, oh, you little newbie.
But this is the thing. And this is something that people think they know about. It's one of those things where people hear about it, they're like, parasocial relationship. Ah, yes. Me thinking I know person more than I do. I am going to be honest. I was guilty of that. I thought it was as deep as it was. But I think it's really important to listen to this episode and to understand that it's more complex than just thinking you know someone more than you do. There are more layers to it, and it's not just something that happens to people who have issues that result in that.
Yeah, it's not for weirdos.
It happens to everyone.
It's not just your like loser, like weeb kid in your class that thinks they're like in a relationship with an anime character. Like,
yeah.
Everybody experiences it, whether you want
literally
to admit
everyone.
It or
not. And there's nothing, ultimately, you can, creators can sort of like do good or do bad, but even if they do absolutely nothing, these things will still happen.
Yeah.
You are unable to stop a parasocial relationship unless you turn it into an interpersonal relationship. Literally, you cannot stop people from having that. So I hope this episode has kind of like enlightened people to what parasocial relationships actually are, you know?
Yeah. Well, life
and made you feel less afraid of them.
Yeah, yes. But so long as you guys have got nothing else to say, that's the end of the show. So
thank you so much for having me.
So Shaba, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Shaba on YouTube or at ShabbatLemon007. No reference to Harry Potter everywhere else.
Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now TikTok too. I am not Corey everywhere.
I am Chamkin everywhere.
I am Noah Fintz everywhere apart from Twitter, where I am Noah Finn Adams, and TikTok, I am the Noah Fintz.
And I am Shava everywhere.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.